Kate Bellmeyer talking to James Dawkins on April 16th, 1999. No pressure. And if there's anything at the end that you haven't, you feel like you haven't talked about that you want to mention, please feel free to jump in. So I'm just going to kind of go chronologically and start off about early schooling and your family. You've lived in Charlotte your whole life, or?
Yeah, well, let me just... it's probably easier for me to just tell my story.
All right, go for it.
And that way you can write down whatever you want to write. But I'm a native Charlottean. I'm what people call now one of the originals.
Okay.
Because so many new people coming into Charlotte. And my family, the Dawkins family, has been here since 1935. So, you know, we have a foothold in Charlotte. We're not moving or leaving. My grandfather moved here in 1935, and we lived. And yet, what you have to understand about Charlotte is Charlotte hasn't always been a big city. And where we lived in an area off Park Road,
okay,
near what's right behind the YWCA on Park Road, and it was a black neighborhood called Little Hope Road.
Okay.
And that was the name of the community, Little Hope Community, and it's still there now. And it's considered East Charlotte. And when I was growing up, that was the country. And from Little Hope Road on out past Park Road Shopping Center, at that time Park Road Shopping Center was the major mall. There wasn't an Eastland Mall, there wasn't a South Park Mall, it was just Park Road Shopping Center. And all the houses out there, which are called Ashbrook, that was farming, cows, and all of that. So you have to have that in perspective.
Of course.
Beyond Little Hope Road, everything south, all the way to Weddington, was farmland. There wasn't Southeast Charlotte.
So interesting to see how things have changed so much.
Yeah, and when you look at it now, you see all the hustle and bustle out that way. It's like a whole other town out there, a whole other city. But, you know, that's what I grew up in. And at that time, I think... I remember I was supposed to go to Sterling Elementary School.
Okay.
And at that time, the black kids in that neighborhood went to Sterling.
Okay.
And that's out down Pineville Road.
Okay.
And it was, at that time, Sterling was a black high school.
Okay.
Or at that time, they had 7th, 8th all the way up. And they also had elementary down there. And I was supposed to go to Sterling. And I remember my mother taking me, we were getting in the car, we were going to Sterling to register. Now this was before 1972, this was 60-something.
Okay.
And I think it was 65, 64. And when we got to Sterling, they said, well, you all do not live in this area, you're supposed to go to Sedgefield.
Okay.
And I don't know, you know, I was little and never really got the story. I don't know whether I was supposed to be an experiment, one of the experiments, to one of the black kids to go to that school, because I was one of the first of five to go to Sedgefield Elementary School at that time. And this was before Swan and all of that.
Okay.
My cousin Vivian Givens went there, and all the older kids that lived on Little Hope Road went to Sedgefield Elementary School. Now, when we went in there, there was another neighborhood, Dilworth neighborhood, and that was one of the older neighborhoods in Charlotte. Cherry neighborhood,
yep.
Older neighborhood in Charlotte. And we were the only black kids there, but there were Cuban kids there and Hispanic kids there. And so we all grew up going to Sedgefield Elementary School.
Is Sedgefield?
Sedgefield.
Okay.
And there wasn't, when you're that little, you don't get a lot of racial tension or anything like that, because you're little and you just see a friend as a friend, and you know them from first to sixth grade or whatever, and you don't see any of that. You get all that from the parents and the outsiders. So for me, I think a part of that also was my family owned land, and we weren't apartment people. We were, and that's what we were, how we were told. And that's not to put down people who live in apartments. But that's how my grandfather told me. He said, you know, don't get an apartment. You buy you a house and get you some land. So we were landholders, and we had 3 acres of land.
You obviously went way back in time.
And that went back in time. And so in that neighborhood, in that Sedgefield neighborhood, people owned their homes.
Okay.
Little Hope Road, all those people owned their homes. So economically, we were probably at the same level that anyone else would have been at that time.
Okay.
So I don't know if that played a part. To this day, I don't know if that played a part in how they received me. I would go to their houses and play, and there was never a problem.
Okay.
You know, we'd go in and never a problem. I mean, in certain homes, you couldn't go in. They wouldn't let you go
really?
In.
Really? Who was the deciding?
The parents.
The same,
it wasn't
okay,
the kids.
Right, obviously
it was
the
parents.
Kids are.
Yeah, it was always the parents. But with that, I went to Sedgefield Elementary School. We moved for 1 year, and then I went to Behringer Elementary School, which is on the west side.
Okay.
And then we moved back, and I went to Sedgefield Junior High, which was the feeder into Morris Park High School.
Okay. Wow.
But with all of that, you know, for me, the perspective was I had gone with those kids from elementary school to junior high and high school. So I knew them, and anyone that, if a new person came in, it was a friend of mine, I would introduce them to my friends that I had gone to school with from elementary to junior high to high school.
Okay. And you said in your neighborhood, in the Little Hope neighborhood, that everyone went to Sedgefield also, so it wasn't like you were going off separately?
We weren't. Well, that was the school that was in walking distance.
Okay.
We weren't bus. We were, you know, it was like West Charlotte's here, and you walk out there to Batesville Road,
right.
It's in walking distance.
Okay.
So we were that close, and it wouldn't make any sense to bus us anyplace else, but so we're in walking distance of the school.
Okay. And your parents obviously weren't projecting any racial
words
onto you. So you, because you were obviously seeing, you know, white kids, black kids, Cuban, whatever. They're all just students and classmates.
Now, we were at that time in the 60s. You know your place.
Right, that's true.
You know, and so. At that time, what my mother told me is that you just have to behave, and we will be there at the school. I don't ever, at the beginning, first grade was not a problem, second grade was not a problem, maybe third through five was a problem. And when I look back at it now, because I have my own kids, I don't think I was acting or behaving any worse than any of the kids were, but I was one of the only black kids in the classroom,
okay.
So, you know, I stood out.
Right.
So if I made a joke or if I was teasing someone, I'd be called down.
Okay.
But there were other kids doing the same thing. They were called down, but they, you know, it was, well, he's doing this, he's doing that. But I wasn't a bad kid, and I wasn't always doing something.
Right.
I just felt like I just stood out. I had some teachers who would, you know, at that time, a lot of teachers had not taught black kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so the teacher would call you out of your name because she was talking about a kid that she taught way back when. And I remember her calling me Charles. And I didn't answer to Charles because that wasn't my name.
Of course.
and she says, Charles, I need you to do this. And I just sat there and I looked around and I was waiting for Charles to say something because that wasn't me. And then it finally dawned on me because she was looking at me that she's talking to me. And I still didn't say anything because that wasn't my name. And then she said, oh, I'm sorry, you're not Charles. And, you know,
okay.
But things like that happen. Back then.
Right. Of course you're not going to answer.
So,
and were the teachers at Sedgefield mostly white? I mean, all white?
All white.
Okay.
All white. At that time, all
okay.
white. We didn't have any. The only black people were on campus were the custodians or the cafeteria worker.
Okay.
I'm not.
Wow. So then you went straight out of Sedgefield Junior High.
I went to Sedgefield 1 through 5.
Okay.
Went to 6th grade at Behringer.
Okay, and how was that in comparison?
That was, it's unique because, see, there I ran into people who went or attended my church.
Okay.
And people who I attended Boy Scouts with.
Okay.
When I was in Boy Scouts. So a lot of the kids that I knew from Boy Scouts, or we had a place called Bethlehem Center in the South Side, and that was kind of like the rec center for the black community in
okay.
South Charlotte.
Okay.
Everybody went to Bethlehem Center, you know, because we weren't allowed to go to other rec centers or
okay.
you know, go into YMCA, so we had Bethlehem Center. And I knew a lot of kids from Bethlehem Center, so they went to Behringer, so I knew a lot of those kids from that and from Boy Scouts. So it wasn't a problem. Matter of fact, I think I worked harder at Behringer because I knew the teachers, and teachers knew my mom.
Okay.
And because they were black teachers, and
okay.
I figured, God, she probably knows my mom and goes to church, and she knows everything. So I better behave. And it wasn't so much I need to behave, it's
right.
just I need to work harder because, you know, there's a link there that she
yep.
can get in touch with my mom quicker than some of the other teachers could.
That's
so
really funny.
From Behringer, yeah, I went back to Sedgefield Junior High. But at that time,
but Behringer wasn't all black. It was
no, it was
predominantly
black.
Okay.
But at that. But we were going through white flight from
okay.
Clanton Park neighborhood.
Okay.
At one time, Clanton Park was, at that time, they were an integrated neighborhood. And then we were going through white flight, people moving out to South Charlotte, because that's when it started to, during that time, that's when things started to boom out in South
right.
Charlotte. And they had built Carmel Middle School out there, and people were moving out, and they were just moving out further and further towards Weddington.
Okay.
And it was an integrated school at that time, but it, like I said, we were experiencing white flight, and there were a lot of white kids there, but like I said, they were moving out of the neighborhood.
Okay.
And, you know, that's basically what's happening in the inner city of Charlotte. White flight, people just moved out to the
yep.
suburbs, and,
yep.
and you know, and then they get their own schools
right.
there,
right.
and the schools in the inner city are neglected, and that's what's happened
mm-hmm.
here in Charlotte a lot.
Definitely. I mean, that's a whole other subject. So it sounds like that's a big difference between Behringer and Sedgefield. And so when you went back again to junior high, was it anything? Of course, you're at
wasn't
this point, you're like 12, so you're probably not
they were feeder schools.
Okay.
Sedgefield and Behringer fed into Sedgefield Junior High.
Okay. Oh,
so
okay.
I met those kids again in junior
Got
high.
It.
See, it wasn't, these elementary schools were very close together because there
okay.
was Reggie Davis.
Okay.
Sedgefield, Behringer, and they're all, I would say they're in walking distance,
okay.
and I've walked between them before, but
oh,
you know, the average person now would not walk, oh, I'm not walking that far, I'm gonna get in a car,
right, right.
And, but
course.
They're kind of within walking distance, and they all fit into Sedgefield Junior High, and Sedgefield fit into Myers Park High.
Okay. So then high school was, Myers Park at that point, was fairly diverse? I mean, we're talking...
At that time...
Because you have the feeder.
Well, Myers Park had always had black kids up in into the 60s, mid-60s.
Okay.
Those that lived in Cherry and some kids that lived in Southside, those that lived in Dilworth.
Okay.
And it was only a few. It wasn't a great many. And then, you know, the class that I represent was like the class where the kids had known each other since first or second grade.
Okay.
And they'd, like I said, gone to Sedgefield, gone to Behringer. I have to throw Smith Elementary School in there also because that's down by the Tyvola area. And we had all kind of been bussed around those schools right there. And then we all kind of came to Sedgefield. And then some of us went to Smith and AG, and then we all ended up at Myers Park.
Okay, so you're all together.
So we're all together, and we all kind of, if we were in sports, we all knew each other.
Okay.
So so it wasn't a problem. And, you know, you remember him at Sedgefield? You remember him at Behringer? Yeah.
Go way back.
So it really wasn't a problem for my class. But the classes before me were the classes that had all the riots and stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Can you describe that a little bit? Because I'm not...
Well, see, I was in junior high. Now, my cousin went through that, and he attended South Mech. And this was 70, 71, 72. And I was at Sedgefield Junior High at that time. And it was really, it was just a feeling of tension all the time.
So much going on.
And if you were a part of it, you were a part of it. If you tried to put yourself out of it, you know, you go home, you're not into that.
Right.
And that's kind of how my family was. Mm-hmm. We're not into that. We're not, you know, and they're going to do what they're going to do. And we're not into all of that fighting, all of that, because it's not all about that. It was basically about, the black community had lost a number of high schools. We had lost Sterling. We had lost Second Ward. We had lost J.H. Gunn. We had lost Plato Price. We had lost, there's two others. I could bring you a list. Okay. My mom has a list of all of the schools that we have lost from late 60s to 69. And 69 was the last school we lost, which was Second Ward, which is now the Metro Center. And there were not any schools replacing those schools on the west side. And even the problem that we're having today extends back to that time when we lost all those schools. And if there was equity, we wouldn't have had those problems then. We wouldn't have the problems now.
True.
And that's 30 years ago. And I can honestly say you could draw a line. If I-77 splits Charlotte and you drew a line like through Charlotte, and I-77 is that line, in 30 years, there's only, that I know of, and there may be one or two more, three schools that have been built west of 77.
Wow.
And that's Reed Elementary School, Lakeview Hornets Nest, the new Bradley Middle School way up Maysport Road. And you see, I draw a blank there because I can't think of any more that are west of 77 in 30 years. That's the problem when you're dealing with equity, and then you're hearing people say, well, you have white flight, and everybody moves out south of Charlotte. We want our neighborhood schools. And then you look over here, and you draw that line, and say, there aren't any schools over here.
Exactly. And so, and the point of that was to close the black schools and then just move everyone into the white school,
well,
in a sense, or
this was an all-black school. Mm-hmm. Charlotte was one at one time. Well, at one time, still is predominantly all-black school. Because they weren't equally funded, they had to be closed. And the thing about that is, at that time, those teachers thought they were doing the best they could with what they had. And they were doing a good job with what they had. But when they saw what was happening on the east side, and the newer schools and stuff like that, and then when they started trying to bring those kids, bus those kids to those white schools, parents would come in and say, well, I'm not sending my kids to this mess. But that's what those people had always been working with at that time. So, you know, they bulldozed those schools. And
On a different note, what was the reaction of, like, your family or your neighborhood of that? I mean, was it...
Well, my neighborhood was close to Second Ward. Okay. We were closer to Second Ward High School than we were Sterling, to tell you the truth. And my grandfather was like, well, I'm glad you're going to this school, which was Sedgefield and Myers Park. And his thing was, I never had a chance to even go to school. I had to work on the farm. So at least you're getting the opportunity to play with the white kids, go to school with the white kids. His thing was, he was part Native American and African American. So his thing was that because they, the kids, the white kids would come over to the house and we played baseball out in the yard. He had an opportunity to do that even back in the early 1900s, but he had to work, you know, and he had to get out of work. And his thing was, I'm glad you're having that opportunity that I didn't have.
Right.
Now, I don't know how much opportunity he would have had back in that time and how much it would have been accepted. But, I that was a vision that I guess he saw. And he saw that in me that I was at least doing something that he didn't get a chance to do.
Yeah, definitely.
So I don't ever remember. You see, most of my folks are gone. My grandfather's gone. My mom's gone. And dad's gone. So all those, you know, I can't speak on how they felt. I can only tell you the feeling.
No, definitely.
There wasn't any tension in the house during that time. If there were any problems with me at Sedgefield or Sedgefield Junior High or High School, it wasn't so much a black-white thing. You just need to buckle down and do the work.
Right, of course. Yeah. Definitely. No, we've just been reading a lot about the black schools, like Ada Jenkins and things, and Davidson even, and it's interesting just to see how so much strong support the black community was giving to those schools, and there wasn't necessarily support of going to white schools, because you know you had your own school, and so it seems like when so many are just demolished, you know, I was wondering what the effect, you know, of that feels like. I mean, if you're losing a little part of your
You probably need to go down to African American Cultural Center and ask to look through their archives. They have yearbooks and history of all those schools that were
lost. Really interesting.
And all of that.
That's a good idea. Okay, but swinging back. So you get to Myers Park, and it's most of the kids that you went to school with or whatever. Teachers are still mostly white?
What happened was they took a lot of the better teachers from West Charlotte and moved them to Myers Park.
Okay.
Because you can look at a 70... '72-'73 Marsh Park yearbook, and you can look at a '69 West Charlotte yearbook, and you can see those same black teachers that they moved from West Charlotte to Marsh Park. And of course, that was so you would have a role model, you know, coming in, and it was an integrated school. Now, Marsh Park is a totally different situation. It's college atmosphere. It's always been that way. And
meaning?
Very low key. It's not a stressful, you know, strenuous, strict situation.
Okay.
And it was, if you have everything, you don't have to fight for it because it's there and you have access to it. And it's there to go. And you know, and that's how I felt about it back then. Everything was there. If I wanted to go out and play tennis, I could go out on the tennis court and play tennis with some of my friends. Now, being on the tennis team is a different story, but if I wanted to play, I could do that. Very low key.
Okay.
Not a lot of stress. Now, this was 72-73 when I came along, before there were riots there.
Okay.
And that was because kids busing in didn't want to be there.
Okay.
Kids there didn't want them there. And
everyone,
I can only tell you stories that I heard because I didn't live through.
Right, of course. So, but by the time you got there, it was fairly subsistence.
By the time I got there, it was, you know, like I said, because we had come through Sedgefield, Barringer, Smith, and AG, all of us knew each other. There was tension there, but a lot of it was gone. I don't ever remember any major riots. There were little fights. There were fights, but it was one-on-one kind of thing. And a lot of it wasn't always black and white.
Right.
It was just fights. So I don't remember that.
Okay. And having, in your personal opinion, having black teachers as a black student, did you feel like that was a better role model that you could better relate?
Well, I had my first male black teacher at Sedgefield Junior High.
Okay.
And I can see why we need a lot more in elementary school. Because a black male student needs to see a black male teacher sometime. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I had ever had a black male teacher. And that was eighth grade.
Okay.
We had 7th, 8th, and 9th back then.
Okay.
That was eighth grade. And until that time, like I said, it was until my 6th grade year I had my first female black teacher.
Okay.
So 1st through 5 was all white. Right. 6th, first female black, and then 7th grade, eighth grade, first male black teacher.
Okay.
Didn't have any male black teachers at Myers Park.
Okay.
They were there, but I didn't take any classes with them. So ultimately, I went to Winston State University, all black college.
You gotta do something.
Yeah. I was in sports, so, you know, you have an ego and all of that with that. So it doesn't bother you that much.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, but describe your sporting experience. What did you play?
I played football and ran track.
Really? What did you run in track? I ran track.
Ran track. Anything from 400 on down. Wow. Everything from 400 on down. Sprinter. And played football in the backfield at Marsh Park. I'm proud to say we were the fastest backfield Marsh Park ever had.
I'll write that down. That's awesome. And were the in sports teams like football and track, were those diverse in terms of black, white? And
I have to say this about a guy named Kirkpatrick that came from Second Ward before Second Ward closed, mm-hmm. and somehow they got him over to Marsh Park High School. This is a story that's handed down. And so Marsh Park could go on into a championship run or into the playoffs because he was really good at Second Ward and he was like the hero of Second Ward. Somehow he got to Marsh Park and went on to Purdue. Now his nephew goes to this school.
Okay.
But I say that for Dice perspective that he was one of the best running backs that they had ever had at Marsh Park. And then it falls down to, and I don't think this is bragging, it falls down to my class from 72 to 75. And when I got there, like I said, we had played ball with a lot of those kids through junior high school, mm-hmm. so we knew a lot of them, except for the upperclassmen. But the one thing about race, when you have talent, that the race part kind of moves to the side because you have talent. And so the tension on the, there's no tension on the field when you're playing.
You just
and we're kids. You got to remember we're kids. But there is tension with family and coaches and family who want to see their kid out there playing.
Okay.
Because, you know, I went there, grandfather went there, and so-and-so went there. So we had a lot of, during my time at Marsh Park, we had a lot of black kids that probably should have started. It may not start, but should have played more than they played. Because they were talented in certain areas. And there was one time that we boycotted a couple of practices.
Really?
And we went in and talked with the coach and said, we have some guys that we know that can play. And they don't have to be starting. They can be on a specialty team, a kickoff team, a punting team, because we're gassing out there.
Yep.
Trying to hold it, the ones that you have
right.
out there. And we're trying to, and he did that for one game, and we really blew. We played West Mecklenburg, I think, and we blew him off the field like 30-something. But slowly and surely, it went back to where it was, and those guys were back on the bench, and they weren't even on special teams. But you could hear in the stands, play so-and-so, put so-and-so in the game, put so-and-so in the game, put this person in the game. You would hear that from the crowd.
Wow.
So.
And the coach was white, I assume?
Yeah.
Okay.
We had one black assistant, and his name was Rudy Abrams. He used to be the coach here. He went to East Mecklenburg, and Garinger, a very successful coach. He went up to Livingston. Now he's at North Carolina Central. He's the new head coach at North Carolina Central. He was the only assistant black coach. There was another guy named Willie Little, but he didn't stay in it long. And at that time, I think Rudy had felt he should have been the head coach at Mars Park. And so he went on, you know, just moved on. There, you know, these things happen. And,
definitely.
But, you know, it's, for some people, it's like, well, maybe it's something better out there for me. And I guess that's, you know, the position he took. Because he was successful here at West Charlotte. Mm-hmm. He was successful at East, and every school at East been successful.
Obviously a good coach. Yeah. Did you have any black captains when you were playing?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It would have been me, but I don't remember, you know, wearing the big C,
right.
And, you know, we're out right. there really the captain of the team. I do know that when we were at Sedgefield Junior High, and we were the class coming in, it was always like I was representing the black kids, and if they were bringing some other black kids in, I would kind of meet them.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm kind of like the person that shows them the ropes, you know.
Okay.
And then, so I was kind of like that.
Okay.
You know, and I don't know how much I was used in that sense,
uh-huh.
but for the overall big picture.
Okay. What about track? Was that
We had to do the same thing for track. We had to boycott for one time for track. And that was because the same incident, we had, if you were talented, you were going. So there were like three or four guys that were always going. These were black guys, they were always going.
To meets, are you talking
to
about?
To meets, okay. To track meets. But everyone else was out there busting them behind,
right.
But they weren't going to the away meets
okay.
a lot. And so, we boycotted and we said, well, we're not coming to practice anymore. Let's do some practice that we're not going to miss.
Right.
And it, you know, and it played a joke, and the white kids came the next week and said, well, we're boycotting too. And we understand what they were doing, but I hope they understood what we were trying to say. And we didn't have any hard feelings for that. We laughed at them, and you know,
right.
Well, what are y'all doing? We're boycotting too. And, you know, y'all gonna boycott? We're gonna boycott. So okay, we all
get out
boycott.
Of practice.
You know, but we had to do that.
That's interesting. Surprises me with running because it's so clear cut. Like, you know, if you can run this, then you know you're good. And so
yeah.
It seems like it'd be hard to get around that, but.
I don't know whether it was a money problem. It could have been a money problem. It probably was explained to us that it was a money problem, that we couldn't take
yeah.
that many. But, yeah.
After the boycott, what happened? Did the coach try and include more? Or
I think we went to, it was probably the same thing, maybe two or three more. We're talking about 20-some
right.
years ago.
Right.
So we may have gone to two or three more meets. But I think at that time, you know, we were still like, the first wave, and now it's really opened up.
Right.
So maybe in a sense we did open it up some.
Definitely, I'm sure. Sure. That's
you know,
really neat that you actually
went out. Yeah, I would say this, and with that, and saying that we opened it up, when I played Little League Baseball, and like I said, I lived on Little Hook Road, mm-hmm. we were supposed to play in the Dilworth League.
Okay.
And, the guy that ran the Dilworth League, his name is on the concession stand that they have out there, Whittington. He was running that program, and he did not believe that blacks lived east of South Boulevard. And so I could not play in that league, and he said, you have to go to the Revolution League, and that's Revolution Park. And they had a league over there. So, you know, me not knowing, you know, I'm a
just
kid.
Little, yeah.
I go over to Revolution. Well, where do you live? I live alone. You can't play in this league. You're supposed to play in the Dilworth League. So I go back to the Dilworth League. And then, you know, and I'm just going back and forth because I don't know. My mom's not out there. I'm playing Little League Baseball. I'm trying out for the team, you know. So I didn't think to go talk to my mom. And I wasn't thinking that this was about my car. I was just thinking, well, they don't know.
Right.
So I go back and, you know, I made it as a pitcher on this team. And the coach wanted me on the team. He went to the guy. He actually went to the guy and said, I know where he lives. He lives on Little Hook Road. and that's east of South Boulevard, even if, and he just would not. I could not play the league. So what they did, and this is really sad, and you know, we're kids, we don't know.
Right.
There weren't only black kids, there were Jewish kids, there were Hispanic kids, any kid that looked like they were of color. This one guy, and it may have been the one guy who saw that, one Indian, it was a dad, and he put us all on his farm team. He had a little farm team. We didn't have uniforms. It was like the farm team of the Little League. And we were all on that team. When I look at it now, you know, I didn't think about it when I was a kid, but when I look at it now, all of us were a brown skin tone, and we were all on that one little team. And that's how we played Little League ball back then.
Hope you beat him.
But that man, the man's still here. He's still alive and owns Whittington Funeral Home.
Oh my gosh.
That's what we had to deal with back then, you know, a lot of that. And you just had to work around that.
In high school, in terms of your social group of friends, would you say that most of your friends were black, your close friends, or did you continue?
It was half and half.
Okay.
Because I had a lot of my black friends through church. And you see, my church is called Walls Memorial Amy Zion Church, but at one time it was in the Little Hope community, and it sat right across the street from our house. And it merged with several other churches and moved. But everyone that lived on Little Hope Road attended that church. So, you know, I met most of my white friends through school. And then when they start building the Ashbrook neighborhood, the kids that lived on the street over, I met most of those. But I also went to school with them.
Okay.
So it was, and through sports, you see a lot more.
Right.
So it's an equal balance.
Definitely. Sports always seem to be the equalizer in situation. And when you, come senior year, you decide you're going to school, college, and was that a...
Well, that's another story.
Go for it.
Okay. At that, like I said, we were the fastest backfield probably that Marsh Park had ever had, and probably in Charlotte. There's a guy named Greg Hoke, first black quarterback Marsh Park had ever had. Really good, strong arm, didn't have the grades though.
Okay.
A guy named Donald Duke Springs, really fast, went to the state in the hurdles. He was one halfback. Myself, and there was a guy named Gene Petro on that team. There was another running back named Carlos Reed. Petro and Reed were white. But, you know, I'm just telling you what we had.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And at that time, Bill Battle, who was head coach of the University of Tennessee, was on campus. And he wanted to talk to Greg Hoke. Condridge Holloway was a black quarterback at University of Tennessee back then, and he was excellent in running that offense. And Greg, our offense was kind of like University of Tennessee's offense, and Greg knew that offense. And he wanted Greg to come in. They were going to take all of us as a package deal. But Greg did not have the grades, so it didn't fall through.
Okay.
And that's how I heard about it.
Because he wanted the whole
team because we knew how to run that offense.
Wow.
Well, I said, I still want to go. I still want to go. And I went to the coach and I said, Coach, what are my chances of going to University of Tennessee? And he just looked at me and said, well, they've already used up their 30 scholarships and you can't get in. And that was it.
Wow.
And this was, I don't know if this was junior year or senior, I'm not sure, it's 20 years ago, but I went, I was in art, so I went to my art teacher. Well, before that, I went to be a track coach, and asked him the same thing, and he was trying to push me toward Western Carolina and Appalachia, and I didn't want to go there. I wanted to go to either Winston or Tennessee, and I know that's two big differences, but that's where I wanted to go. Now, everybody in Little Hope Road that went to college probably went to Winston.
Okay.
And I wanted to go to Tennessee because I thought I was going to be in the backfield with Condridge Holloway and Willie Gall and all of those, Reggie Jones. We had ran track against Galt and Reggie Jones at some of the South Carolina meets. They would come in on Saturdays when we'd be down there on Fridays sometimes, or Saturdays, and they'd come in on Sundays. So I'd seen those guys and talked with them, and I wanted to go there.
Right.
But it seemed like I wasn't getting anywhere with my football coach or my track coach. So I went to my art teacher, and we sent off for a manual for admissions at University of Tennessee. And he had some connections, and he got me a grant and scholarship at University of Tennessee. And I was accepted, I had the grades. The only thing that stopped me from going was I had to come in the spring quarter because they didn't have enough rooms. And everything was set to go. And so at that time when we lived on Little Hope Road, my next door neighbor was a Winston grad, and he had a full ride to Winston in track and field. And we were sitting there, and I remember him saying, "Well, do you see University of Tennessee in here?" And he said, I said, "No." And he said, "Well, who do you see in here, and who's got a scholarship waiting for you?" And I looked at Mom and said, "I think you better sign that thing." So that's how I ended up at Winston.
Wow, that's awesome. So you ran track at Winston?
I ran track 2 years at Winston, played football 1 year.
Okay. Wow. And this art teacher that you mentioned that you went to, was this someone that became a role model / teacher?
Well,
just
Dean Barber, he was really, if you go over to Mars Park, they have like what used to be the student union, not student union, but student lounge. It used to be called student lounge. And in there, there are pictures of his past students that he taught. And he's deceased now. He died of, brain cancer or something like that. But all of his students would win Scholastic Art Awards competition.
Wow.
And during that time, through the late 60s and 70s, he was probably one of the best art teachers in Charlotte Mag. A lot of his kids went on to college, some architects, some art teachers, and some millionaires, you know. So, you know, it's a big range,
right.
But they all came through his program, and he was known. That's why I went to him. He was known to getting people in college, and so I was in his class, and I was like, well, I've gone every route I can. I got to come to you now. And even when I came out of college, he helped me a lot.
In what way?
And getting set up in the school system.
Okay.
And teaching. Yeah,
wow.
Teaching
that's
art.
Awesome.
Yeah.
When you were at Winston, did you know you wanted to teach?
Yes.
Okay.
By the time, yeah, I did.
At that time. I just always like to know when people decide they want to teach.
Yeah, Winston-Salem State was known as a teacher's college.
Okay.
At one time. It was called Winston-Salem TC, teacher's college. So if you're going there, and you know, it was like 20-to-1 ratio there, 20 girls to 1 guy ratio. Because and it's also known as a fine art school. I didn't go there for that ratio.
Sure.
But it was known as a fine art school. It had a very good art department. Rolanda Watts, who had a television show.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Her husband, her dad was, when I was there, he wasn't chairman of the art department, but he was one of the art instructors and professors there. Hayward Obrey was chairman of the art department there. And there was, I can't think of his first name, Diggs. He owned all the land around there. And he was also one of the professors there. So I had some really good professors, black professors, in visual arts at Winston at that time.
Wow. And you said it's an all-black school, though?
All-black school,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So is that
one of the 5 of the UNC system.
Okay. Is that a big change from after high school, or was it just?
Not really. Not really. And the change that you see 20-to-1 girls, yeah, maybe.
I know your motives.
As far as the academics are concerned, no, it's not really a big change.
That's really funny.
Self-esteem goes up. Scott
sure.
Hall,
so then after you graduated, did you come back home?
Yeah, okay. Came back to Charlotte.
And knew you wanted to teach art, and
yeah.
So you were certified after?
I received my Bachelor of Arts at Studio from West, then came home, started subbing at Marsh Park.
Okay.
Went back, showed my work to Dean, and he said, well, are you going to get certified? And I was a couple hours short, and I said, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I think you need to. So I went out to UNC Charlotte, got certified out there.
Okay.
And came back and started working in the system.
Okay, and so your first job was at Myers Park, you said, or? Well, subbing.
I was subbing and a tutor at Marsh Park.
Okay. And then where?
Then I left Marsh Park, went out to UNC Charlotte, then came back, and then I started at Northeast Middle School.
Okay.
In 80, I think that was 81, 82, and then 82, I was at Carmel. 82, 83, Carmel, what was called Carmel Junior High at that time. And I was there for like 16, 17 years.
Wow. Well, now what was that? Describe that in terms of diversity.
Carmel?
Mm-hmm.
That's in Southeast Charlotte. They bused in kids from Hine Valley, which was the old Sterling neighborhood. But see, by this time, boom, it has boomed out there. It's boomed out there, and you got Carolina Place and all those malls out there, and they, you know, what used to be all farmland out that way, you know, it's just houses and business and everything. So they bus kids in from that area and from also some areas of the Farringer neighborhood.
Okay.
Go figure, you pass maybe four or five middle schools, but that's what they did.
Okay, so you've got a good crew there. And in terms of being a teacher now and having, and efforts to promote good race relations, I guess I could say.
It's easier for me because I grew up with them since elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how to relate to them better.
Okay.
That's because Little Hope Road neighborhood is close to the Dilworth neighborhood, and there were a lot of Puerto Rican and Cuban kids were lived in that area. I'm looking at their faces now while I'm talking to you, you know. So we grew up together, so they're